Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IndiGrid Limited Q1 FY24 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sushil Dhoot from Nuvama Wealth Management. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, friends. So on behalf of Nuvama Wealth Management, welcome you all to the IndiGrid first quarter FY24 conference call. We are joined today by the senior management of IndiGrid, represented by Mr. Harsh Shah, CEO and the Whole-time Director, Mr. Navin Sharma, Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Meghana Pandit, Chief Investment Officer, Mr. Satish Talmale, Chief Operating Officer. So we'll start with the opening remarks by the management, followed by a Q&A session. I will now like to hand the call to Harsh sir for his opening remark. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for joining on the call today. We've had a good beginning of the financial year, and I would like to take you through the presentation first, and then we'll be happy to address any more questions on the presentation and the results. On the slide number 3 of the presentation, we reiterate our vision. Our vision is to become the most admired yield vehicle in Asia, and we believe that with a focused business model, value-accretive growth, predictable distribution, and optimal cap structure, we'll be able to achieve that. On the next slide, slide number 4, is a portfolio overview at IndiGrid as we stand today. This does not include the recent acquisition that we have signed up for, and then this represents the current portfolio of IndiGrid as is. So we have about 22,900 crore of assets under management across 19 states and the UT, about 8,500 circuit kilometers, and 17,000 MVA of transformation capacity. Coming to the quarter 1 FY24 highlights on page number 6, we completed our sixth years of value-accretive growth and sustainable distribution and best-in-class corporate governance practices since listing. It was sixth anniversary for IndiGrid in this quarter, and we are proud to have delivered superior risk-adjusted return to unit holders over the last 6 years since listing. We signed for Virescent Renewable Energy Trust last quarter and announced the details for unit holder vote. The transaction closure process is underway. We have received unit holder approval as well as SEBI approval, and we are targeting closure of the transaction sometime in the last week of August 2023. We've also received both unit holder approval and subsequent SEBI approval for declassification of Sterlite Power Transmission Limited as a sponsor. In addition to the above three, we have received and started work on several augmentation projects which are allotted to us on a regulated tariff mechanism across our four of our substations in Kallam, Patratu, Prithla, and Amargarh, and that's something which we have started CapEx on that. Financially, as we increased the DPU growth last year, last quarter, we have continued with that, and we are distributing with a run rate of 13.8 rupees a unit, and we are able to do it with our revenue and EBITDA both increasing around 11%-12% versus last year. Collections are at 86% in line with usual quarterly trends. Typically, the quarter four is higher and quarter one is marginally lower. Our AUM stands at 22,900 crore with a net debt to AUM at 60%, which is well below the 70% cap provided by SEBI. On operating performance, our average availability is at 99.5%. Solar CUF of the small portfolio that we have is around 28.05%, and there is a temporary impact on availability on NER due to some insulator flashovers, and we'll discuss that in subsequent slides. All in all, it's been a robust performance which has allowed us to deliver the sustainable DPU and the growth that we promised last quarter. On slide number 7 is about industry update. The power demand continues to breach past peaks, and it is again one of the highest power demand that we are seeing in the country. And we are confident that with growth in GDP as well as the rural electrification initiatives that have been done in the last 5 years, we do see this power demand growing on year-on-year basis. Forecasting this consistent growth in the power consumption, there has been a lot of development on the transmission side, which are part of the National Electricity Plan, which is notified by CEA, which provides short-term framework, provides capacity additions where there are both in the grid as well as the storage. It provides measures to have RE available for 24/7 through BESS and pump storage. So all of this has translated physically into about 1.4 lakh crores of PVCD bids in the sector that we are seeing in near future. And these are identified projects which are approved by NCT. And therefore, we think that this is going to result into a sizable pipeline for transmission business. On the slide number 8, which is just to provide an update on how IndiGrid would look post-Virescent acquisition. So as an update, as I mentioned earlier, we have received the approval from unit holders on June 23. On July 23, we have received, or on the July 2023, we have received SEBI approval for closing this. And August 23, we are targeting to close this transaction. With this transaction, IndiGrid's AUM is almost going to grow up to around 27,000 crores. The watt mega peak capacity will grow almost fivefold to 676 watt peak. And number of employees will also substantially grow because we are taking over most of the employees of Virescent, which will allow us to operate the portfolio smoothly. And in general, number of projects are doubling, almost doubling to what we had earlier. So in general, it is a substantial growth that's taking place as an integrated AUM. Coming to quarter one FY24 operating performance, I would like to invite Satish to brief you around that.
Yeah, thanks, Harsh. Good afternoon, everyone. So for quarter one operations performance, we achieved zero fatality for the quarter, and there were some minor incidents towards first aid medical treatment, which are part of our continuous improvement program to achieve our zero harm mission. On performance, on power transmission, we achieved more than 99.5% availability across the portfolio. Solar generation, this is relatively 6% higher generation compared to last year, which is at 61.26 million units at a 28.05% CUF. On NERSS particularly, if you see there is a slight dip on availability, that is due to insulator issue, which we understood the root cause and we are trying to mitigate that in next quarter. On reliability, we achieved 0.24 target. Generally in Q1, the number of trips due to weather-related events are higher, but still, due to all the reliability improvement measures, we achieved a lower score compared to last financial year quarter. Few technological initiatives, we have initiated our process to implement remote access server technology installation across our substation, and also automatic fault analysis system, which will help us to troubleshoot all the faults in a timely manner and even help our ability to restore trips in a most efficient manner. On solarization, we installed a small capacity in Bhopal and Dhule substation along with battery storage. We are also targeting to solarize all other substations, and we are planning to implement those in coming quarters. On cybersecurity, there are no material threats which are identified and recorded by our 24/7 security operations center. That's it. I guess I will hand over it to Naveen for next slides.
Thank you, Satish, and good evening, everyone. We are on slide number 10. good quarter with robust performance as compared to the same quarter previous year. We have recorded a revenue and EBITDA of rupees 629 and 567 crores respectively, which translates into 12 and 11% YOY growth. NDCF generated for the quarter was rupees 173 crores, and board has approved distribution of rupees 3.45 per unit, which is in line with our guidance, and this translates into DPU growth of 5% on YOY basis. Coming on to the collections for the quarter, it stood at 86% as compared to 79% collection in Q1 of FY23. Historically, Q1 collection remains a bit low after a superior Q4 collections. In Q4 FY23, collections were at 114% level, which translates into 100% collection over last two quarters. The DSO as of 30th June stands at 66 days, which is similar to Q1 FY23 DSO. Coming on the next slide, number 11, DPU for the quarter is rupees 3.45 per unit. It will be distributed in form of interest, dividend, and capital repayment, which is rupees 3.18, 0.06, and 0.21 respectively. The outstanding units at the end of the quarter is around 70 crores, and the gross distribution to all the unit holders at rupees 3.45 comes to rupees 242 crores. Record date for the distribution is August 3rd, and tentative date by which the unit holder will receive the distribution is August 12th. NAV as of June 30th stood at rupees 130.5 per unit. Post this quarter distribution, IndiGrid would have distributed rupees 75.31 per unit with a total distribution of around rupees 4,130 crores. On the right-hand side, we showcase the trend of distribution on YOY basis, which is stable and scalable growth of 3-4% over the year. We are on track to meet this year's guidance on distribution of rupees 13.8 per unit. Moving on the next slide, number 12, we showcase a waterfall from our EBITDA to the NDCF generation and distribution. At an SPV level, we have a consolidated EBITDA of rupees 573 crores. Net of the finance cost, working capital movement, capex, and taxes at SPV level, NDCF generated at SPV comes to around rupees 479 crores. The net of the trust level expenses, interest costs, and tax, we have generated NDCF of rupees 173 crores. As we started off with a healthy reserve of rupees 322 crores, we have utilized our reserves by rupees 68 crores, and our closing reserve stands at rupees 254 crores, which is in excess of one quarter's DPU basis current guidance. So that's all from my side. I hand over to Meghna to take the subsequent slides.
Thanks, Naveen. Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm on slide number 13. Snapshot of our balance sheet. We continue to remain AAA rated by all the three rating agencies. At the end of the quarter one, our average cost of debt remains at a healthy 7.58% with a cash balance of about 1,041 crores. This includes DESRA of around 370-odd crores and about 241 crores of distribution for the quarter and balances free cash. Almost 83% of our overall borrowing book of 14,600 crores is fixed rate to the extent of around at least 3 to 4 years. We ended the quarter with a net debt to AUM of 60.1% and again, very robust interest coverage ratio of more than 2 times. During the quarter, we drew IFC's loan of around 1,140-odd crores at a cost of debt of about 7.7%. The borrowing book remains fairly diversified between bank loans of almost about 53-odd% and NCDs of 47%, which are subscribed by a diverse set of investors, including mutual funds, insurance companies, HNI, retail, corporate, provident funds, etc. The bottom chart talks about our repayment or refinancing schedule. For this fiscal, FY24, the refinancing number is close to about 3.5% of the overall book, very small. And the remaining years, as you can see, is very smoothly distributed with not more than 10 to 11% of the borrowing book coming up for refinancing. Moving ahead on slide 14, just depicts our risk-adjusted total returns that we are providing to the unit holders, right, since inception. So our total returns is close to about 109% and annualized return of 13%, which compared to both debt and equity indices continues to remain superior. Especially on the risk side, if you compare with the beta, we remain at the lowest, 0.08. Slide number 15, the business outlook as we look at it. So the first one, currently we are focusing on completing the Virescent transaction. Along with that, the framework asset that we have, we are looking at from GR Infra, Rajgarh, as and when it becomes operational, we will look to acquire that also. In addition to that, with the significant attractive transmission bid opportunities coming up, we will look at synergistic greenfield bidding across both transmission. Battery energy storage system is also an area that we are closely looking at. With the current guidance that we have provided on the DPU of 13.8, we continue to focus on that. And post the Virescent acquisition, as we have mentioned before, we are looking to provide a 2 to 3% increase in the DPU after the acquisition is completed. Parallelly, our focus on improving the balance sheet continues to exist in terms of optimizing the interest cost on all the incremental borrowing that we do, alongside ensuring that the tenors remain pretty long. We have always focused on maintaining adequate liquidity to ensure any sort of emergencies that come about can be looked at. We had taken unit holders' approval in June to raise equity to the extent of 1,500 odd crores, and this was with an intention that after we recent acquisition, our net debt to AUM would be somewhere about 65 odd percent, and with that in mind, we are looking to raise equity to the extent of up to 1,500 crores, which will bring the net debt to AUM back to around 60% level. Parallelly, asset management continues to be the focus with ensuring that the maximum availability is there across the portfolio. Self-reliant O&M practices continues, and the EHS and ESG practices that we have adopted, we will continue to improve on that. On the industry part of it, we continue to remain very active across various industry bodies, and we are working on ensuring more and more private sector participation in the electricity sector, similarly on the national monetization pipeline. So we make representations across various industry bodies and improving investor education about specifically IndiGrid as well as InvITs as platforms continues to be the case. With that, we'll take a pause here and we can move to the Q&A session, please. Over to you, Sushil.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Shirish Vaze from Money Life Advisory Service. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. My first question pertains to the agreement with GR Infra. So I just wanted to understand this framework agreement is only restricted to one asset, or it will also extend to subsequent assets as and when they come up for acquisition. Thank you.
So this agreement, framework agreement that you are referring to, is only for one asset. And subsequent asset, there will be different agreements depending on what is the arrangement for each bid.
Got it, sir. And my second question pertains to, I just wanted to understand, are we also looking at metering infrastructure concessions to complement the portfolio of current portfolio?
I think we keep evaluating different businesses, and certainly metering infra has become a large opportunity. Having said so, we are at a very early stage in evaluation of the same. And if it becomes interesting, we would pursue. But at this point in time, it's very, very early stage.
Got it, sir. Thank you. And then let's get back in the queue.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, before we move to the next question, a reminder to the participant, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Usha Virendra from Acharya. Please go ahead.
Your slide number 12 says the quarterly report of Q1. EBITDA to NDCF shows a reserve of 681 was used to distribute DPU. Am I correct, sir?
Yes.
So then what is the reason to dip into reserve?
Okay. So typically what happens is that in our collections, while they look very flat and 99% and 100%, on a quarter-on-quarter, they typically vary. So as Navin mentioned, last quarter it was 114%. This quarter it was 86%. And therefore, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, quarter one is low, quarter two is a little higher, quarter three is a little low, and quarter four is high. That's what we have seen historically. So we keep a reserve about a quarter of distribution, which is generated out of the 10% flexibility that SEBI provides, which allows us to streamline the quarter-on-quarter variability. Otherwise, if it is 100% pass-through, there may be more volatility that may come into our distribution. So we keep this reserve, and then this reserve gets refilled when we receive our collection back on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So quarter four, we added to the reserve. Quarter one, we are consuming. Next quarter, we will see what the collections are, and then it reflects that. So the reserves are just an amount that allows us to smoothen the quarter-on-quarter variability on the cash collections.
And sir, how is this recent being financed, like loan or equity? I think I heard some equity portion.
Sorry, what is it? Can you repeat that?
How is the acquisition of Virescent being financed? How are you getting the funds?
So acquisition of Virescent will be a mix of equity, debt, and internal accruals, all three put together. In the shorter term, we might raise debt and then repay with equity as we raise it. So it's going to be a mix of all.
Okay. So do the current unitholders get to apply for any rights or something like that?
So if we come up with a rights issue as a mode of capital raising, yes, unitholders will get a right to apply.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touch-tone phone. Participant to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Pradyuman Dalmia from Lansdowne Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. No, just wanted to understand more, and if you could elaborate a little more on the 1,500 crore capital raising plans, what are the timelines, etc., that you have in mind for this, and what is likely to be the debt and equity split of this?
Okay. So just to clarify, the 1,500 crore is the unit capital raise, so it's entirely equity. In terms of timeline, I think it's difficult to communicate what timeline will it be, but we are evaluating all options, including what earlier unitholder asked about rights issue, preference issue, and institutional placement. This specific approval that we had taken was for institutional placement, and each capital raising method has its own nuance or advantage or shortcoming. So we are evaluating that. At this point in time, we don't have a, I would say, timeline to conclude that. It's kind of an approval we have taken, but we'll keep evaluating.
Okay. So you cannot commit at this stage whether this will be completed in this quarter, next quarter, or FY24 at least?
Oh, yeah. We cannot commit to that, but I think the approval that we have taken is valid for a year, so.
Okay. And you'll obviously make the necessary announcement, etc., as and when you do decide which route you're going to take.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participant, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Prateek Kothari from Unique Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon and congratulations, Ash, for the increased DPU. Ash, my first question is on we signed an MOU with GR Infra and we're trying to bid for some greenfield. I mean, they will do the construction, but then we'll acquire from them. Similarly, you spoke about a large bidding pipeline which might come out. So just if you can highlight how are things moving on ground, what kind of deals do we see, what kind of deals are we currently going through?
Sure. So I think as I described, there is a big pipeline with respect to the development pipeline in terms of number of bids that are getting bid out. It's, to be honest, unprecedented number of CapEx that is getting planned in the sector. So we do see a lot of bids getting participated in that. Now, we are not a pure play developer, and therefore we participate in bids where we have real synergies. However, having such a large pipeline helps that we can target on the projects that we want to work on. On the renewable side also, we do see good traction in terms of several transactions. We are evaluating them, but at this point in time, you know, we don't have anything to announce or anything signed, but we do see both on operating renewable side and on the construction transmission side a lot more opportunities coming in.
So when we speak about this heightened bidding which might come in, so is it just the existing players who want to lighten their balance sheet to participate in this and hence will get an opportunity to acquire those assets, or we participate along with this for the new bidding and maybe acquire those assets 2 years down the road?
I would say it's a mix of both. It's a mix of both. But we don't bid for all projects, right? In a development stage, we have limits in terms of maximum 10% of our size. So we don't bid, and we are far more conservative than a normal developer. So our target assets are slightly different and specific. We don't participate in all bids. But we do see both happening, that people who might want to offload assets to build new assets, as well as we might find some good opportunities on building sites. So both.
Correct. And that has already started playing out.
Oh, yes. So the number of bids that we announced, I mean, in the call, 1,20,000 crores, they are already identified bids with bid process coordinators to be conducted in next one and a half years, so, or maybe 2 years. So that's already identified. It's a matter of time in terms of when they will be bidded out.
Correct. Sure. And post this recent acquisition, like you mentioned, in the next month itself, our AUM share of that or solar goes to 17-odd%.
Yep.
So I believe for the time being, at least now, this would be the cap on non-transmission assets, given we always wanted to keep it below 20.
So the cap is 25 where we are working towards. But, I mean, as you said, we are within the cap, we are agnostic. If we get a good solar projects at a good value and good quality, we don't mind buying it right now also. So the cap we are working towards is 25, but 25 is not the goal, right? The difference is it's not the goal, but that's the cap. So I won't say we are capped at 17.
Correct. And I believe we include battery energy storage as part of transmission. So in non-transmission except solar, what else can be a part of it?
I mean, we haven't done anything till now. But hydro is part of it. Wind we are not doing for sure. So wind is not something which is linked, which is quality of linked to what we do. But yeah, pretty much it remains in the sector. I mean, somebody asked me about smart metering. That could also be, but that's very small and very early stage. So it could be any of these 2-3 things.
Correct. Sure. Well, thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vivek Sureka, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Just to check, am I audible?
Yes, you are. Please go ahead.
Hi. So first, to clarify, in the opening remark, we mentioned that DPU would go up by 2-3% post the acquisition of new assets. Is this after considering the equity dilution, or is it before equity dilution?
The guidance is after equity dilution. Okay. And again, there's a guidance, so depending on when we acquire and all that variations, it will, the timing of this bump up may change, but yes, it is after equity dilution, to your question.
Thanks. So that's fair enough. Another more a request, right? In last two presentations of the quarters, you were giving a kind of a clue of how the dividend distribution would work over the next 3 to 5 years. This presentation that view was taken out, that view was very helpful. I know we don't, we did that view post, we have a identified new asset, but that view was very helpful. Can we kind of include that going forward in our presentation? If that's not a big thing for the management.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big thing. It's a standard slide which hasn't changed. I mean, this quarter is more largely around the current changes quarter update slide. And typically, we add that slide when we acquire a new asset, right? So to give a perspective. So even if you download that slide which we published in last presentation, it still holds true, right? So I mean, but it's a good input. We'll definitely consider to include it subsequently. But it remains the same what we published earlier.
Yeah, I'm, but that would be helpful. Just one last question from my side. Looking at all the kind of monsoon thing which is happening across the country, have we seen any adverse impact on our side? Hopefully not, but it's coming. And are we well covered by insurance on that?
So the question is valid. We do see, I mean, not just fortunately to start with, we are not impacted by the floods that we have seen in Himachal and in other parts of the country. I mean, we are just fortunate around that. On the impact on the seasons, every season, you know, in a large portfolio, there is some kind of impact that comes in. Sometimes in snow, you know, in the quarter one, typically, a quarter two, there are high winds in the central India. Then quarter two, quarter three, there are rains in the northern and, you know, western India. So variety of impact that comes in, but nothing that is material enough to impact our stability or I would say operations. There is one impact that we Satish spoke about in NER project, where we are dealing with a specific issue with respect to insulators, and especially that is in a hilly terrain in a monsoon, which makes it difficult to restore. But those incidents keep happening across the portfolio. We're not really materially impacted by that. And whenever it's significant or rather slightly important, it comes out in availability as it has in this quarter as well.
Thank you. That's all from my side. And all the best for future results.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. We have our next follow-up question from the line of Pradyumna Dalmia from Landstone Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks again. No, I just had one clarification which I wanted to ask. I believe there has been some recent changes in terms of the treatment of taxation on InvITs and REITs. Can you clarify on that? And is, you know, distribution by way of interest and dividend, are they kind of taxed the same currently, or is there any differential now whereby, you know, one may be more tax beneficial versus the other?
So I will give you a perspective, but I would advise you to, you know, refer to the tax advisor, because each investor category gets taxed differently based on their, you know, status and jurisdiction and other things. But at the high level, there is as such no change that has taken place with respect to the taxation of InvITs. There was a amendment that got introduced in the budget, and subsequently it got streamlined, and that was pertaining to capital repayment and not with respect to interest and dividend. And with respect to capital repayment, what is clarified is that as long as an InvIT REIT has distributed up to the capital that it has issued, so let's say if IndiGrid was issued at 100 rupees, till the point in time IndiGrid repays, capital repayment is up to 100 rupees a unit, it will not be a TDS, and it will go out of the cost of acquisition of the unit holder, and therefore taxed as in capital gains, not immediately, but when the unit holder sells. Other than that, and let's say beyond 100 rupees, if somebody pays capital, in IndiGrid scenario, it's extremely unlikely, but some REITs or other InvITs are paying, then it will be taxed marginally like other income or interest. That's the only clarification that has come in this budget. Other than that, it remains what was last year. So interest gets taxed based on marginal income. Dividend, if we have received the dividend from subsidiary, which is under old tax regime, then it remains as a tax-free dividend. If the SPV follows a new tax regime, then it remains a taxable dividend, again, part of financial income, just like interest. So there are three, four categories that exist, and therefore we disclose all of them in a detailed manner in our distribution sheet, so that it allows people to consult with the chartered accountants.
Okay, great. Thanks for the clarification.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you. So I think we had a very action-packed quarter last quarter with a large transaction, and we are still working towards closing that. And we look forward for the continued support for all our unit holders who have consistently supported the decisions taken by management, both on asset acquisition and capital raising and others. So very thankful and grateful to all of you to join today, and look forward to meet you in the next call. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IndiGrid Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.